just last year. I mortgaged Solitude, which isn't just a B&B, but a sprawling 200-acre property. My grandma had kept it free and clear, and I wanted more than anything to keep that legacy. Except we were run down on every level. I couldn't bring myself to sell off any more land, so I made the terrifying choice to mortgage the property and throw everything into improvements, hoping to launch us as a luxury retreat of sorts. I've got my fingers crossed that it will work. Between the capital I took out for improvements to the cabins and properties and the construction loans on the new cabins to start in the summer, I'm this crazy mix of hopeful and scared. Not going to lie, it's kind of exhilarating. Nothing ventured, nothing gained, right? Off to take on my next scary choice, volunteering with the judgy ladies on the PTA. Ella.
Wedging Maisie's binder under my arm, I checked my phone for the room number just as the elevator dinged on the pediatric oncology floor. It was almost 11 p.m. Those moments with Colt had cost me some time, but I'd had a pretty smooth drive. "May I help you?" a nurse wearing a kind smile and Donald Duck scrubs asked at the desk. She looked to be about mid-40s and really alert for how late it was. "I'm headed to room 714 for Maisie McKenzie," I told her. One thing I'd learned in my decades serving in our unit was that if you acted like you belonged somewhere, most people believed you did. "It's past visiting hours. Are you family?" "Yes, ma'am." According to Colt, I was, so in a really convoluted way, I wasn't lying. Her eyes lit up. "Oh, you must be her daddy. We've all been waiting to see what you'd look like." Okay, that one I wasn't going to lie about. It was one thing to throw the broad generalization out there and another to claim the honor of being Maisie's dad. As I opened my mouth to speak, I felt a hand on my shoulder.
"You made it," Ella said with a soft smile.
"I made it," I echoed. "So did the binder." I handed it over and she hugged it to her chest in an all too familiar gesture that made my chest ache. She should have someone to hold her during times like this, not some inanimate object.
"I'm going to take him back," Ella told the nurse.
"You go right on ahead."
I walked down the hallway with Ella, taking in the bear murals. They weren't kidding about the bear floor label, huh?
"Nope, it helps the kids remember," she answered. "Want to meet Maisie? She's still awake, despite my every effort otherwise."
"Yes," I answered without pause. "I would very much like that." Understatement of the century. Next to the pictures of mountains Colt had drawn for me, Maisie's pictures of animals were my favorites. But those belonged to Chaos. Just like with Ella and Colt, I was starting from scratch with Maisie. Our steps were the only sounds as we walked down the long hallway.
"This wing is for inpatient," Ella told me, filling the silence. "The other two are for outpatient and transplants."
"Gotcha," I said, my eyes scanning the details out of habit. "Look, you need to know what that nurse thinks."
"That's your Maisie's dad," Ella finished. "I heard. Don't worry, she's not going to force adoption papers on you or anything. I left all the dad info blank because like hell were they going to call Jeff in case of emergency. He's never so much as seen her."
I wish I could say that I don't understand how someone can do that, but it happens all too often where I'm from. She paused just outside the room labeled with Maisie's name.
"And where is that?"
"I grew up in foster care. My mom dropped me at a bus station in New York when I was 4 years old. Syracuse, to be exact. Last time I saw her was when she had her rights terminated in court a year later. I've seen some horrible parents in my life, but also some great ones." I pointed to her. "And if your ex is so pathetic that he's never seen his daughter, then he doesn't deserve her, or you, or Colt." There were a million questions swimming in those eyes of hers, but I was saved by Maisie.
"Mom?"
the tiny voice called from inside the room. Ella opened the door and I followed her in. The room was a good size, with a couch, a single bed, a padded rocking chair, and the giant hospital bed that held a small Maisie.
"Hey, sugar, not sleeping yet?"
Ella asked, depositing the binder on a table behind the door and moving to sit on the edge of the bed.
"Not tired,"
Maisie said, pausing in the middle for a giant yawn. She wiggled around her mom to peek at me.
"Hello?"
Those crystal blue Ella eyes took in every inch of me in cursory judgment. She was thin, but not too frail. Her head was perfectly shaped, and the lack of hair only made her eyes seem that much bigger. "Hey, Maisie, I'm Beckett. I live in the cabin next to yours," I told her as I came to the foot of her bed, using the softest tone I had.
"You have Havoc."
She tilted her head slightly, just like Ella. "I do, but she's not with me. I actually left her with Colt to keep him company while I came to see you. I hope that's okay. Seemed like he could use a friend to talk to."
"Dogs don't talk."
"Funny, that's what your brother and I talked about too. But sometimes you don't need someone to talk back to you. Sometimes we just need a friend to listen, and she's really good at that." Her eyes narrowed for a moment before gifting me with a brilliant smile.
"I like you, Mr. Beckett. You let my best friend borrow yours."
And just like that, I was a goner. "I like you too, Maisie," I said softly, scared my voice would break if I raised it any further than that. Maisie was everything I knew she'd be and more. She had the same sweet, determined soul her mom did, but brighter and undimmed by time. And at the same moment that I felt overwhelming gratitude that she'd accepted me, I was swamped with the irrational anger that she had to go through this.
"We're going to watch Aladdin. Want to watch too?"
she asked.
"We're not going to watch Aladdin. You were going to sleep," Ella said with a stern nod.
"I'm nervous," Maisie whispered to Ella. If my heart wasn't hurting already, it was screaming now. She was so little to have a surgery like this tomorrow, to have cancer. What kind of God did this to little kids?
"Me too," Ella admitted. "How about this? We'll start the movie and I'll curl up with you. We'll see if we can get you to sleep."
"Deal,"
Maisie nodded. Ella queued up the movie and I moved toward the door. "I'll leave you girls to your evening."
"No, you have to stay,"
Maisie shouted, stopping me in my tracks. I turned to see her eyes wide and panicked. Yeah, I wasn't going to be the cause of that look on her face ever again. "Ella?" She looked from Maisie back to me.
"Maisie, it's really late, and I'm sure Mr. Gentry would rather have a nice big bed. There's a bed here."
Ella sighed, shedding her eyes. I saw the battle she'd written about, the need to parent Maisie as if there wasn't an overwhelming chance that she was dying, warring with the knowledge that she most likely was. But that pleading in Maisie's eyes wasn't an issue of being spoiled. There was a stark need there. I crossed to her bed and sat on the edge. "Can you give me a reason?" I whispered so Ella couldn't hear us. Maisie glanced back at Ella, and I looked over my shoulder to see her busying herself with inserting the DVD. "You have to tell me, Maisie, because I don't want to weird out your mom, but if it's a good reason, I'll go to bat for you." She glanced up again, and then at me.
"I don't want her to be alone."
Her whisper ripped through me louder than an air raid siren. "Tomorrow?" I asked. She nodded quickly.
"If you leave, she'll be alone."
"Okay, let me see what I can do." Her little hand gripped the edge of my jacket.
"Promise?"
There was something solemn in the way she was asking that reminded me of Mac, of the letter. It was almost as if she knew things she shouldn't, couldn't.
"Promise me you won't leave her alone,"
she repeated, her whisper soft. I covered her small hand with my own. "I promise." She searched my eyes, passing judgment again. Then she nodded and lay back against the raised bed, relaxed. I crossed the darkened room to Ella as she slipped off her shoes. "I'll absolutely leave if you want me to, but she's pretty adamant."
"What's her reasoning? I've never seen her demand something like that."
"That's between us, but trust me, it's pretty sound. What do you want me to do?"
"There's just the couch and that little bed."
Ella bit her lower lip, but it wasn't intended to be a sexy gesture. Mac had the same tell when he was worried.
"I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy."
"I've slept in far worse conditions, trust me. It's not a problem. What do you want me to do, Ella?" I'd do whatever she wanted, but God, I hoped she wanted me, any part of me. Knowing how scared she was of this moment, of what was coming for Maisie tomorrow, and not being able to comfort her in the way she needed was killing me. She released her lip with a sigh, her entire posture softening.
"Stay. I want you to stay."
My chest constricted in a way that made taking a deep breath impossible, so I sucked in a shallow one and ditched my jacket on the back of the rocking chair. "Then I'll stay." The procession in front of me was solemn, almost reverent. The nurses pushed Maisie in her bed, down the hallway toward the thick blue line that marked where the surgical wing became doctors and patients only. Ella walked by her side, Maisie's hand in her own, leaning over her daughter. Their steps were slow, like the nurses knew Ella needed every single second she had left. They probably do know. After all, this was just a normal day to them. Another surgery on another kid with another type of cancer. But to Ella, this was the day she feared and longed for with equal ferocity. They paused just before the blue line, and I hung back, giving them the space she needed. With her hair pulled back, I could see the faint, forced smile on her face as she ran her fingers over Maisie's scalp, where her hair would have been. Ella's lips moved as she spoke to Maisie. The strain visible in the tense muscles of her face, the periodic flex of her neck. She was holding it together, but the string was thin and fraying by the second. I'd watched her unravel since 6 a.m., when the first nurses came in to begin Maisie's prep. Watched her bite her lip and nod her head as she signed the papers, acknowledging the risk of removing a tumor this size in a girl this small. Watched her put on a brave face and smile to keep Maisie comfortable, joking about how Colt would be so jealous of her new scar. Then I watched the FaceTime conversation between Maisie and Colt, and my heart broke for them. Those two weren't just siblings or friends. They were two halves of a whole, speaking in half sentences and interrupting one-word answers like they had their own language. Though Ella was terrified, I knew it was Colt who had the most to lose when it came to Maisie, and there wasn't a damn thing I could do about it. I pushed my hands into the pockets of my jeans to keep from going to her. That need pulsing through me was selfish, because holding Ella would help me, but not her. There was nothing I could do for her besides stand and witness what I knew she feared would be her last moments with her daughter. Powerless. I was so damn powerless, just like I'd been when we'd finally found Ryan's body 3 days after the op had imploded. There was nothing I could do to bring back his heartbeat, to erase what had to have been the worst hours of his life, or miraculously heal the bullet wound that had entered at the base of his skull and exited. Havoc, sunset on the mountains, Ella's smile. I mentally repeated my three as I let out a shaky breath, blocking out the thoughts. The memories, they didn't belong here. I couldn't help Ella now if I was trapped then with Ryan. One of the nurses spoke to Ella, and my throat squeezed shut momentarily when Ella leaned forward to kiss Maisie's forehead. Maisie's hand appeared over the rails of the bed, handing over a worn pink teddy bear. Ella nodded and took the bear. They wheeled Maisie down the hallway and through a set of swinging double doors. Ella stumbled backward until her back landed against the wall. I lurched forward, thinking she might hit the floor, but I should have known better. She held herself against the wall, the bear clutched to her chest like a lifeline as she raised her head toward the ceiling, taking gulping breaths. She didn't turn to me or the nurses who walked past, just drew inward as if she knew her only source of solace was going to come from somewhere deep within herself. My composure deserted me as I realized that she didn't look for comfort because she wasn't used to getting any, that this scene would be identical if I wasn't here. But I was here. Knowing it was an intrusion and beyond caring, I walked forward until I stood in front of her. Her eyes were closed, her throat working as she battled for control. Everything in me ached to hold her, to carry as much of the burden as she'd let me. Ella. Her eyes fluttered open, shining with unshed tears. Come on, it's going to be a long day. Let's get you some food and some coffee. If I couldn't care for her heart, I could at least sustain her body. I don't know if I can move. Her head rolled slightly as she looked toward the doors. I fought every day for the last 5 months. I've taken her to treatments, argued with the insurance companies, fought with her over capfuls of water when the chemo made her so sick she dehydrated. Everything we fought for has been for this moment. And now that it's here, I don't know what to do. I got a firm grip on my volatile emotions and reached for her face, only to stop myself and lightly grasp her shoulders. You've done everything you can, and what you've accomplished, how far you've brought her is astounding. You've done your job, Ella. Now you have to let the doctors do theirs. Her eyes found their way back to mine, and I felt her torture like it was a physical pain through my stomach, the ceaseless cut from a dull knife tearing me in two. I don't know how to give that control over to someone else. She's my little girl, Beckett.
I know, but the hard part is already over. You signed the papers, no matter how difficult it was, and all we can do now is wait. Now, please, let me feed you. She pushed off the wall, and I retreated a step, putting a respectable amount of distance between us.
You don't have to stay. They said it's going to be hours, and not just a few.
I know. Her tumor is on the left adrenal gland, and though it's shrunk, there's still some very real danger that she'll lose that kidney. A longer surgery means they're doing everything they can to save it, and that they're being thorough to get every scrap of that tumor out. I was listening when they prepped you this morning. A sad half-smile lifted the corners of her mouth.
You do that a lot. Listen. Pay attention.
Is that a bad thing?
No. Just surprising.
I don't care how many hours it takes. I'm here. I'm not leaving you. An eternity passed as she made her choice, not just to get food, but to believe me, to trust that I meant what I said. I knew the moment she'd decided, when her shoulders dipped, a tiny bit of the tension draining from her frame.
Okay, then we're most definitely going to need some coffee.
Relief was a sweet taste in my mouth, a gentle, full feeling in my heart. Unable to find the right words, I simply nodded. So the bear? I asked 2 hours later as we sat in the waiting room, side by side on the couch, our feet propped up on the coffee table.
Ah, this is Colt,
Ella explained, lovingly stroking the face of the fuzzy, well-loved bear. Colt is a girl?
Maybe Colt just likes pink. You know, only real men can pull off wearing pink.
She shot me a sideways glance. I'll keep that in mind. After a light breakfast, her stomach was too queasy for more. We'd fallen into an easy rhythm of conversation. Effortless, even.
The bears were a gift to the twins from my grandma. One pink, one blue, just like everything back then. But Colt fell in love with the pink one. Had to have it with him all the time, so the blue one became Maisie's. When they were three, Ryan came in and took Colt camping overnight. Maisie was always more of an indoor girl, and she begged to stay home, so I let her. But Colt almost refused to go. Maisie knew it was because they couldn't stand being separated, so she grabbed the blue bear, told him it was Maisie, and sent him on his way.
So that's actually Colt's bear? Ella nodded.
He sends it with her every time she's hospitalized, so they can be together, and he has the blue one at home.
Yeah, that gnawing pain had moved to my heart. You have incredible children. Her smile was genuine, and I nearly lost my breath when she turned slyly, sharing it with me.
I'm blessed. I wasn't sure how I would do it when Jeff walked out, but they were always so... they were everything. I mean, sure, they were exhausting, and loud, and messy, but they brought out the color in life. I can't remember what the world looked like before I held them, but I know it wasn't half this vibrant.
You're a great mother. She made a motion to shrug off my compliment. No, you are, I repeated, needing her to hear me, to understand my awe of her.
I just want to be enough.
Her gaze darted to the clock, like it had every 5 minutes since Maisie had disappeared past those swinging doors. You are. You are enough. She blinked at me, and I cursed my tongue. I was going to give myself away if I wasn't careful.
Thank you,
she whispered, but I knew from the way she looked away that she wasn't sure. So what's next? Monopoly? Life? I asked, trying to lighten the mood and distract her. She pointed to the wooden box at the opposite end of the table.
Scrabble, and you'd better be careful. I have no qualms about kicking your butt, even if you are nice enough to sit with me all day.
I wasn't nice. I was a lying, manipulative asshole who didn't deserve to sit in the same room with her. But I couldn't say that. So instead, I grabbed the box and prepared to get schooled.
So you grew up in foster homes?
Ella asked me as we made our 64th loop of the floor. Maisie had been in surgery for 6 hours, and we'd had an update from the surgical team about 15 minutes ago that all was going well, and they were trying their hardest to save her kidney. I did.
How many?
I honestly can't remember. I got moved a lot, probably because I was a horrible kid. I fought everyone who tried to help, pushed every rule, and did my best to get kicked out of my placement, hoping that would somehow make my mom come back.
I didn't expect her to understand. Most people who grew up in normal houses with a quasi-normal family couldn't get it.
Ah, the sweet, illogical logic of a child, Ella said.
Of course she got it. That was what drew me to her in the first place, her simple acceptance of me through our letters. But from what I'd seen, she was like that, accepting. Pretty much.
Which was the best home?
She asked, again surprising me. Most people wanted to know the worst, like my life was fodder for gossip to feed their salacious need for the tragedy of others. My last one. I was with Stella for almost 2 years, starting around my 15th birthday. She was the only person I'd ever wanted to stay with. Memories hit me, some painful, some sweet, but all glossed over with the kind of filter only time could give.
Why didn't you?
We reached the end of another hallway and turned around, walking back. She died. Ella paused and I had to turn around. What?
I'm so sorry,
she said, her hand squeezing my biceps.
To finally find someone just to lose them.
My instinct was to rub my hands over my face, shake it off, and keep walking. But I wasn't going to move a muscle with her hand on me, no matter how innocent the touch was. Yeah, there are really no words for it.
Like someone picks up your life and shakes it like a snow globe, Ella offered. It seems to take forever for the pieces to settle, and then they're never in the same place.
Exactly. She'd captured the feeling with the precision of someone who knew. How was it I'd never found anyone who understood what my life had been like, and yet this woman defined it without blinking an eye?
Come on, we haven't quite worn a path through the linoleum yet, she said, and started our 65th lap.
I followed.
This is taking too long. Why is it taking them so long? What's going wrong?
Ella paced back and forth in the surgical waiting room. They just haven't updated us in a little while. Maybe they're finishing up. I watched her from where I leaned against the windowsill. She'd been calm, collected even, until we reached the hour when they'd estimated the surgery would be done. As soon as that hour passed, something flipped inside her.
It's been 11 hours,
she shouted, pausing with her hands on her head. She'd long ago pulled so many strands of her hair loose that it floated around her, as disheveled as she was. It has.
It was supposed to take 10.
Her eyes were wide and panicked, and I couldn't blame her. Hell, she was only giving voice to the same thoughts in my head.
Is everything okay, Mr. and Mrs. McKenzie?
A nurse popped her head in.
Anything I can do for you?
I'm not.
Yes, you can find out exactly what's going on with my daughter. She was supposed to be out of surgery over an hour ago, and there's been no word, none. Is she okay?
The woman's face softened in sympathy. Ella wasn't the first mom to panic in the waiting room, and she wasn't going to be the last.
How about I go check for you? I'll come right back with an update. Please, thank you.
Some of the wild left Ella's eyes.
Of course.
She gave Ella a reassuring smile and left in search of information.
God, I'm going insane.
Ella's voice was barely a whisper. She shook her head as she fought off a lower lip tremble. I pushed away from the sill and was to her in four long strides, not halting to think about who I was or who she knew me to be. I simply wrapped my arms around her and pulled her to my chest like I'd wanted to do since the first moment I saw her. You wouldn't be the mom you are if you weren't going a little out of your mind, I reassured her as she relaxed against me.
I think I've blown right by little and straight to Asylumville,
she mumbled into my chest before turning her head and resting it just under my collarbone. Damn, she fit against me exactly like I knew she would, perfectly. In another life, this is how we would have faced every challenge together. But in that life, Maisie was healthy and Mac was alive. In this world, well, she wasn't exactly hugging me back. Right, because I had her arms pinned between us. Was she pushing me away? Was I that oblivious? That realization hit me like a fire hose and I loosened my arms immediately. What the hell had I been thinking? Just because she wanted me to stay with her didn't mean she wanted me to touch her. I was her default, and lucky to be that. But I sure as hell wasn't her choice or preference.
Don't let go,
she whispered. Her hands were still between us, but she wasn't pushing me away. They were simply resting on my pecs. If anything, she leaned in.
I'd forgotten what this felt like.
Being hugged? My voice was sandpaper rough.
Being held together.
Never before had a single phrase brought me to my emotional knees. I've got you. I tighten my hold, splaying one hand wide just beneath her shoulder blades and cupping the back of her head with the other. Using my body the best I could, I surrounded her, imagining I was some kind of wall, that I could keep away whatever heartache was coming for her. My chin rested on the top of her head, and second by second, I felt her melt and give. Although I couldn't tell her I loved this woman, I would take on armies for her, kill for her, or die for her. There was no truth greater than that, and no other truth that I could give her. Because where she was honest and strong and kind, I was a liar who had already hurt her in the worst way possible. I had no right to hold her like this. But even worse, I wasn't going to move a muscle.
Mrs. McKenzie?
The nurse came back in, accompanied by Maisie's surgeon.
I just caught them as they were coming out of surgery. Yes?
Ella turned in my arms and I let her free. But she took my hand, squeezing so hard I had a momentary concern for the blood flow to my fingers. The surgeon smiled, and I felt a rush of relief more powerful than any time I'd escaped battle unscathed.
We got it all. It was touch and go there for a while with her left kidney, but we managed to save it. You've got quite a stubborn little girl on your hands. She's in recovery right now, resting. As soon as she wakes up, we'll bring you back to see her, but don't expect her to stay awake for long, okay?
Thank you.
Ella's voice broke, but those two words carried the kind of meaning that usually took hours to convey.
You're welcome.
The surgeon smiled again, exhaustion written on every line of her face, before leaving us alone in the waiting room.
She's okay.
Ella's eyes closed. She's okay.
She's really okay,
she repeated. Then as if someone peeled back whatever had been keeping her upright, she collapsed, her knees giving out under her. I caught her before she hit the ground and hauled her up against my side.
She's okay, she's okay.
Ella said the phrase over and over again until the words came on heaving cries, the sobs rough and raw. I hooked one arm under her knees and one behind her back, picking her up as she buried her face in my neck, hot tears streaking down my skin to soak my shirt. Then I settled onto the couch, holding her across my lap as her gut-wrenching cries shook her small frame. She cried in a way that reminded me of the valve being released on a pressure cooker, the result of too much confined for way too long. And even though the relief was still sweet from the successful surgery, I knew there was so much more ahead for her, for them. This was simply a pause in the fight that allowed her a precious second to catch her breath.
I've got you. She's okay, I told her, smoothing my hand over her hair. You're both okay.
I spoke in the present tense because that was all I could promise her. And for right now, with Havoc safe with Colt and Maisie tumor-free and Ella curled in my arms, it was enough.
Chapter 11. Ella.
Letter number 21. Ella. Yes, I can believe the guy at the library asked you out. No, I don't think it's odd or a prank. Why would you? It's not like I haven't seen your picture, which, yes, I know, puts me at an advantage between us. Not sure if you noticed, but you're definitely not hurting in the looks department. Go ahead, give me your excuses. Yes, you have two kids, and yes, one of them is facing incredible odds. You own a very time-consuming business, and from what I know about you, you also tend to put yourself last when factoring anything into your life. But listen to me. Scratch that, read me. None of that makes you undateable, as you call it. Do you know what's undateable? Someone who's selfish or consumed with the tiny things in life that don't mean anything. To me, the most attractive quality in a woman is her ability to give of herself. And Ella, you do that in spades. I get that you haven't gotten out there since Jeff walked out. I understand that for the last 5 years you've been consumed with raising your kids, building your business, and generally being everything to everyone. But that doesn't mean you can't let someone in, especially now. I'm not going to say you need someone to lean on because I know you've become the expert on standing on your own. But with what you're facing, I know it would help to have someone there to support you in the moments when you feel like it's impossible. Go out to dinner with the guy, Ella. Even if nothing comes of it, you'll know you gave the universe the shout-out. You can't turn away every good thing that comes to you because you're scared of what might happen or not happen. That's the coward's way out, and you are no coward. And honestly, who wouldn't fall for you? We're 3 months into this, and I'm half in love with you without ever having been in the same room. Just give the guy, give yourself, a shot at some happiness, because you deserve it. Or you could wait until January when I get to randomly show up at your door. Just food for thought. Chaos.
Need anything else? I asked Maisie, handing her the iPad. She was all set up in the living room of the main house's residence, within shouting distance of Haley and Ada. Nope, she replied, popping the pee as she opened one of the apps her teacher had recommended. Your belly feel okay? It had been 2 weeks since her surgery, and while the incision site looked to me like a monstrous pink snake slithering across my daughter's belly, she swore the pain was nearly gone. Maybe it was the way she'd slept the first few days after, or her sore throat from the 12 hours of intubation, or the feeding tube that had stayed with her for days. But I had a hard time believing her. Or perhaps it was that my pain tolerance on her behalf was so much lower than hers had grown to be. Mom, I'm fine. No puking or anything. It's okay. Go. She looked up at me. Besides, as soon as you leave, Ada will give me the sugar-free ice cream. I don't think you were supposed to tell me that. I laughed and pressed a kiss to her scalp, still shiny and smooth. Overhauling her diet had been a challenge, that was for sure. You know why it has to be sugar-free, right? You said sugar feeds the monster inside me. And even though the big part of the monster is out, the rest of him is in my blood. So we can't feed the monster. Right. I'm so sorry, Maisie. She looked up at me with eyes that felt decades older. It's okay. The monster doesn't like this kind. I kissed her again before I left, grabbing her binder on the way out the door, after letting Ada know I was headed out. Stopping at the entryway mirror for a moment, I tried to smooth back the frizz that had developed in the braid I'd put into my hair this morning. Stop. No matter what you do, you're still gorgeous, Haley remarked as she came up behind me. Huh. I can't even remember the last time I went to the gym or put on some makeup. I'm batting for doesn't look psycho. Gorgeous is way out of my league. She propped her head on my shoulder, and our eyes met in the mirror. You have the kind of gorgeous that shines through no matter what. Looking for a raise? I teased. Nope, just telling the truth. Now get out of here before you miss that meeting. Ada and I have Maisie. Don't you worry. Worrying has become my default emotion. She searched my face for a second before her eyes lit up, which meant she was about to suggest something ludicrous. I know just the thing. Haley, I groaned. We were friends, but her idea of fun didn't exactly fit with my life. Let's double date. I'll grab Luke and you bring Beckett. We can go out to a movie or dinner or try out that new karaoke bar in the mountain village. A bar? I let my tone tell her exactly what I thought about that one. That was the life of carefree people who didn't have responsibilities like kids or cancer or a kid with cancer. You know, normal 25-year-olds. Yes, a bar. Because if anyone could use a drink, it's you, Ella. And I know Beckett would be up for taking you out. My spine stiffened. It's not like that. Just the thought of Beckett had a blush rising to my cheeks. That man has his eyes on you whenever you're in the same room. Come on. How many times did he drive back to Denver after Maisie's surgery? I turned away from the mirror to face Haley. 3 times. In 2 weeks. And every time he'd shown up, my heart had done this stupid, crazy leaping move. Something had changed the day of Maisie's surgery. Not just because he'd been there, but because I'd wanted him to be. It had been the first time during Maisie's treatment that I'd allowed myself to not just lean on someone, but let them hold me up. The morning he'd shown up with Colt as a surprise, about 3 days after the surgery, I'd just about melted into a puddle of goo. He seemed to know exactly what I needed, what Maisie needed, and provided it before I could even ask for it. Yes, in 2 weeks, but it's not romantic. Uh-huh. It's not. He's here because Ryan asked him to be. That's it. Nothing more. At least, that's what I told myself whenever I found those green eyes watching me, or me watching him. And you don't find him attractive or anything, right? Dark green eyes the color of pine, thick hair and thicker arms, washboard abs that trailed down to get a grip. Of course I do. I've seen the man. And felt him. I'd felt the protective way he'd held me. Tight, but not oppressive. As if he'd simply known that I needed to be held together in that moment. Felt the gentleness of his hands when he'd wiped away my tears after sobbing out everything I'd held in. Felt the joy he was capable of when Colt had climbed into bed next to Maisie and held his sister. Felt the overwhelming capacity for love that he had, even if he didn't want to acknowledge it. Yeah, I felt entirely too much when it came to Beckett. Well, yeah, you'd have to be dead not to notice. Because he's hot, Ella, and not in a passingly nice kind of way. He's hot in a take me on the kitchen counter and let me bear your children kind of way. Plus, he's starting to speak in more than one-word answers, which shows definite potential in the moving past broody department. A flash of something hot and ugly hit my stomach and was gone as quickly as it came. Jealousy. There was no reason to be jealous of Haley. Sure, she was beautiful and available and didn't have so much baggage attached to her that there was a giant Samsonite tag on her forehead. But the minute we'd come home from Denver, she'd completely stopped seeking out Beckett. And it wasn't because she wouldn't be interested. I'd heard the gossip getting coffee yesterday. Half of Telluride was interested in the newest search and rescue member. It was because Haley thought maybe I was interested. He has always spoken in more than one-word answers. And I already have children, remember? Besides, speaking of children, if I don't walk out right now, I'm going to be late for this meeting. Okay, go, run. But that man lives next door. And from what I've seen, you're going to have to deal with all that. She motioned to my red face. Pent-up frustration, somehow. A guest walked in, the bell ringing with the light tinkling sound that had taken me hours to decide on. Saved by the bell, Haley whispered, before turning to our new guest. Welcome to Solitude. You must be Mr. Henderson. Your cabin is all ready for you and your wife. Her smile was wide and mirrored by the hipster-looking 20-something. Summer hiking season was almost upon us. I took my opportunity and the binder and escaped out the front door. It was 10:31 when I pulled in, but I parked in the elementary school's designated spots like a good parent and took the extra minute hit to my already tardy arrival. Ella! Jennifer smiled out at me through the glass. They're all set up for you. Hey, Jennifer. I signed in on the clipboard and opened the door when the buzzer sounded. How is Maisie feeling? She asked as she walked me into the offices that sat just behind the reception desk. She's good, thank you. Surgery went well, and she's ready to return to school on Monday. Really? Already? That's amazing. You'd be shocked to see how quickly kids bounce back. And as long as her levels are good, she's safe here. I just can't believe she beat it that quickly. Oh, no. I saw that look in her eyes, and I hated to be the one to dash it. No, Jen. She had the tumor removed, and they got it all, but she's stage 4. Her bone marrow is still overwhelmingly cancerous. She just made it through the first step. Her face fell. Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I didn't understand. I offered her a smile. Don't worry, not many people do, and I hope you never have to. She's fighting. Her lips pressed together in a flat line before she nodded her head. Of course. She opened the door to the conference room, and I squeezed her hand as I passed, reassuring her that she hadn't said anything worthy of embarrassment. Ah, Miss Mackenzie, I'm so glad you could make it, Principal Halson said from the head of the table. His tie was as straight as his face. Apparently we were all business today. Miss May, I smiled at Maisie and Colt's teacher. She was in her late 20s, and Colt had only the best things to say about her. A pang of guilt smacked me square in the chest at how absent I'd been from school activities this year. Yeah, I definitely wasn't winning PTA Mom of the Year over here. Not even okayest mom. I was pretty much the non-existent mom. And this is Mr. Jonas, who is our district superintendent and will be joining us today. Principal Halson motioned toward the older gentleman at his left. The man nodded at me with pursed lips that morphed into a forced smile. Mr. Jonas. I took the seat at the end of the conference table, leaving two empty seats between me and what felt like the army that had gathered against me, or rather, Maisie. The loud sound of the binder's zipper opening was almost obscene in the silence. So, Miss Mackenzie.
Ella,
I reminded him.
Ella,
he agreed with a nod.
We needed to meet today because of Maisie's attendance record. As you know, she needs to be present for a minimum of 900 hours to complete kindergarten. Right now, between her absences and times she's needed to leave early or come late, she's at about 710.
Okay. I flipped through the binder to her school section, where I kept record of her days, hours, and documentation.
We feel, at this point, we need to discuss her options,
Principal Halson said, pushing his glasses up his nose and opening the manila folder in front of him.
Options, I repeated, trying to understand.
She hasn't met the legal requirement,
Mr. Jonas said, his voice soft, but his eyes telling me that the issue was cut and dried in his opinion.
Right.
I flipped to the letter I'd kept in a page protector and took it out of the binder. I absolutely agree that she hasn't met the requirement, but the district assured us in this letter dated in November that you wouldn't hold her to it. That rule is waivable in the regulations by the district due to catastrophic illness, and that's what you agreed to. I slid the letter down the table. Miss May caught it and passed it along, sending me a sympathetic smile.
We did, and we're not here to throw ultimatums at you, Ella,
Principal Halson assured me.
We're here to discuss what's best for Maisie. We made this agreement without looking at her long-term future.
Because they hadn't thought she'd make it this long.
What's best for Maisie?
I repeated softly.
You mean, like not having stage 4 neuroblastoma? Because I definitely agree, that's not in her best interest.
Mr. Jonas cleared his throat and leaned forward, resting his wrinkled, folded hands on the table.
We absolutely sympathize, Miss Mackenzie. What your daughter has been through is tragic.
And there went my hackles, rising as my spine straightened.
It's not tragic, Mr. Jonas. She's not dead.
Of course not, my dear. We're not saying that any of this is fair. But the truth is that Maisie might not be ready for first grade.
My dear, like I was a little girl in bloomers asking for a pretty new doll. To hell with that.
We've done everything you've asked. Miss May has been quite accommodating, and I assure you that she's ready.
She is, Miss May nodded. Principal Halson sighed, taking off his glasses and cleaning an imaginary spot.
Let's look at this from a different angle. Can you tell us where she's at in her treatments? What can we expect in the coming months?
I flipped back to the sheet where I kept the estimated treatment plan, realizing we'd gotten to a point where I wasn't sure. We were at a crossroads.
She just completed a major surgery 2 weeks ago. She's healing wonderfully and is ready to come back to school on Monday. Then the week after, we'll be in for another round of chemo, which, as you know, means she's gone a solid school week.
We're hoping her levels will remain stable enough to come back for the end of school, but there's no telling.
Then we're into summer. I'll know more when we go in for chemo and I can meet with her oncologist.
The administrators shared a look that made me feel like I wasn't on the other side of the table, but the other side of the battlefield. I felt that change come over me. The one that had appeared the moment they'd placed the twins in my arms. Like pieces of armor clicking into place as I prepared to defend my child.
Have you thought about having her repeat kindergarten? If she's in a better situation to be fully present next school year, then it wouldn't harm her. We wouldn't force it, of course, but it's worth a thought. In fact, a lot of our parents hold back their children at the kindergarten stage for various reasons. Certainly this procedure qualifies, I snapped. With all due respect, it wasn't a procedure. It was a 12-hour, life-threatening surgery in which they removed a tumor the size of a softball from my daughter's adrenal gland. This isn't an inconvenience. This is cancer. And no, next year won't be better. She's fighting for her life, so excuse me if I don't share your worries that she may have missed the critical day of kindergarten when you covered the life cycle of the butterfly. Statistically, she might not even...
My throat closed. My body rebelling against the words I hadn't spoken since the day they'd given me her odds.
Next year will not be better.
And you don't wish for her to repeat her kindergarten year?
Principal Howson wrote down a note in the folder.
It's kindergarten. Do you seriously feel like she needs to?
A repeat wouldn't just be hard for Maisie to swallow, but for Colt as well. They'd be a year apart in school, which would mean that even if, when she beat the cancer, she'd have to look the consequences in the eye every day.
She doesn't, Miss May spoke up. She's quite bright, and she'll do just fine in first grade, she told the administrators.
The two men conferred quietly for a moment before turning back to me.
We'd like to offer you a solution.
Transfer her to an at-home program.
Kindergarten isn't as academically challenging as first grade, and next year she'll need the flexibility.
Pull her out of school.
School her at home, Mr. Jonas corrected. We're not against you, Miss Mackenzie, or Maisie. We're genuinely trying to figure out the best solution. She's not in school for the required hours, and next year her workload will increase exponentially. Couple that with the liability of having her here with her weakened immune system, the worry placed on the staff and the other children, and we might all be more comfortable, including Maisie. She could keep the best schedule for her health if she were schooled at home.
Other cancer moms did that. I'd spoken with a few of them, but it always seemed like they pulled them out as a last resort, when they were dying. It wasn't so much the physical act of removing her from the school, as it was the emotional acknowledgement that she couldn't go. And that was equally devastating to us all. Maisie, Colt, and especially me. But it would relieve stress on her levels, on the days she couldn't get out of bed. On the mornings she spent lurched over the toilet, crying, only to look at me and swear she could make it.
What would it entail?
I could teach her, Miss May offered. I'd come by in the afternoons whenever she felt well enough. She'd stay on track. She'd be exempt from district hour requirements, and we'd be able to personally tailor the program.
Can I think about it?
Of course,
Mr. Jonas said, passing back the letter from early in her diagnosis. We adjourned the meeting, and Miss May walked out with me.
I felt numb.
Or maybe it was simply that I'd been hit so hard and so often in the last 6 months that I no longer registered pain.
Colt is just heading to lunch, if you'd like to see him,
she offered.
Colt. He was exactly what I needed right now.
I'd very much like that, I told her. She reached for my hand and squeezed it lightly.
He's a phenomenal kid. He is kind and compassionate and defensive of the smaller kids.
My smile was instant. I lucked out with that guy.
No. He's phenomenal because he has an exceptional mother. Please don't forget that in the midst of everything. You're a great mom, Ella.
I couldn't think of anything to say that wasn't a rebuttal of that statement. So I simply gave her hand a squeeze back. Then I stood with a dozen other moms who were lined up outside the cafeteria, all waiting for their kids. Most were the normal PTA moms, the ones who had impeccable minivans, color-coded day planners, and stylish but sensible fashion. Some I knew, some I didn't. I looked down at my Vans, worn jeans, and long-sleeved tee, and felt unkempt. I'd never really understood the phrase, let yourself go, but this moment, yeah, I got it. I couldn't remember the last time I'd cut my hair, or taken the time to actually put on more makeup than concealer for under my eyes and mascara. None of it mattered in the scheme of things, of saving Maisie. But right now, I felt the separation between me and these women as certainly as if they were in ball gowns.
Oh, Ella, it's so nice to see you, Maggie Cooper said, with a hand over her heart, flashing a diamond bigger than her knuckle.
She was a year older than Ryan and had married one of the corporate guys from up in the ski village. I'd half expected their engagement announcement to read, "Local girl makes good."
You too, Maggie. How is... Crap. What was her kid's name?
The obnoxious one who'd colored on Maisie's backpack with permanent marker and thought it was cute to force kisses on her.
Doug? Deacon? Drake? Phew. He's great. Really soaring at piano right now and looking forward to soccer. It starts next week in case Colt wants to play.
Look, I meant to ask, have you thought about treating Maisie holistically?
I mean, those medicines are really poisonous. I was reading this blog that talked about eating just cassava root or something. It was really intriguing. I can absolutely send it to you.
Yeah. Thank God I'd gotten good at plastering a smile on my face and nodding.
Sure, Maggie, that would be great.
I'd learned over the last 6 months that the easiest way to deal with the well-meaning advice givers was just to say thank you and non-committally agree to read whatever research they'd found about snake venom or whatever. Lucky for me, the class rounded the corner, carrying lunchboxes or lunch cards.
Great. And I found a bunch on organics. They're supposed to be great for kids with leukemia and everything.
Neuroblastoma, I said over the kids' heads as they came between us in the hall. She has neuroblastoma.
Oh, right. I get confused with all those cancers.
She waved it off like there was no difference.
Oh my God, who is that?
The mom next to her asked, looking pointedly down the hall. I turned to see Colt walking just behind the class with a million-watt grin and havoc in between him and Beckett. Beckett, who was sporting cargo pants like he wore to work, and a navy blue Telluride Mountain Rescue t-shirt that stretched perfectly across his chest, and around the swells of his biceps. I have no clue, but sign me up, Maggie said, her eyes locked on Beckett as her son found her. Beckett nodded at something Colt said and took off his baseball hat, placing it backward on Colt's head. Ugh, my stupid freaking heart flipped right over and got that teenage glowy feeling that I most definitely didn't have time for. Seriously? The other mom sighed. Fresh blood? Seasonal, has to be, Maggie answered. Beckett looked up and immediately saw me, a smile transforming him from gorgeous and broody to just flat sexy. When was the last time I'd even thought about a guy in that way? Jeff? As if acknowledging it gave it life, I felt a low hum in my belly, like my sex drive had just kicked on after almost 7 years of lying dormant. Mom! Colt saw me and ran, bypassing the line to jump at me. I caught him easily, lifting him against my chest. For a split second, I worried that I'd just crossed the big boy line. But as intuitive as he was, he put his head down and squeezed me tight. I'm so glad you're here, he said, and I let him down, having gotten my Colt fix.
I am too.
Beckett's voice slid over me like raw sugar, gravelly and sweet at the same time. From the corner of my eye, I saw Maggie's jaw drop, and then she disappeared, hopefully to the lunchroom, even though I knew those few words would set the gossip tongues wagging. What are you three doing? I leaned down and rubbed Havoc behind her soft ears. Hiya, girl.
Beckett was here for show and tell, Colt exclaimed.
Oh, God, I'd forgotten. Oh, buddy, I totally spaced that you needed something to share today. I'm so sorry. At what point was I going to stop screwing up and get my shit together?
No, Mom, it's okay. Beckett told me last week he'd bring Havoc in, so I took it off your kitchen calendar. It was so cool. She chased her toy, and then Beckett hid me in a tree and told her to find me, and she did. Definitely the coolest show and tell of the year.
I'm so glad. And I actually was. My guilt slid away for a precious second, and I looked up at Beckett in gratitude. Thank you, I said softly. The slight tilt to his lips wasn't quite a smile. It was something softer, more intimate, and infinitely more dangerous.
I was happy to do it.
I was here for a Maisie meeting and just needed a little Colt fix, I told him. His brows lowered.
Everything okay?
Before I could answer, Maggie was there with freshly applied lip gloss and a flyer, standing so close she was almost between us. Beckett's posture stiffened.
Oh, Ella, she said. Before I forget, here's the information for the soccer team. I know Colt had wanted to play in the spring league, but we all understood with what Maisie's going through. Well, you have a lot on your plate. But just in case you can fit in the time, we'd love to have him.
Soccer? Really?
Colt lit up like a Christmas tree, and I wanted to smack Maggie and every other mom on the planet who had the ability to say yes without checking schedules for doctor's appointments and chemo sessions. Colt, we're really busy. Beckett gently cupped my elbow, turning away from Maggie.
Let me help.
Beckett. Letting him help meant depending on him, and letting Colt depend on him too. And while I knew he had the best of intentions, I was also aware that his soul had the same restless demons Ryan's had.
Please.
I was certainly glad he wasn't asking me to strip out of my clothes, because between that voice and the plea in his eyes, I was helpless. My head nodded before my brain got the better of it, and me. You want to play soccer, Colt?
Yes!
Okay, we'll make it happen. Amid Colt's celebration, Maggie thrust the flyer in my face and turned her smile on Beckett.
And who might you be? One of Telluride's finest.
His eyes lost their warmth, his expression turning distant, almost cold, and unlike any expression I'd seen from him. Was Maggie the exception, or was I?
No, that's the sheriff's department.
His tone was curt, almost unrecognizable from the way he spoke to me and the kids.
Private sector, huh?
Yes.
One-word answer. Maybe Haley was right. She'd simply seen something I hadn't because he hadn't shown it around me.
Oh, the special kind of search and rescue, she said,
taking the step that did put her between us.
The ones who get contracted out for the dangerous calls.
Her voice lowered, and I stepped back to avoid asphyxiating on her perfume.
I guess,
Beckett answered.
You know that company is actually funded by a conglomerate of the owners of the ski resort and the hotels in the village, right? They wanted something immediately available, knowing how busy the sheriff's office gets.
Is that so?
Beckett stepped back, but Maggie followed. His jaw flexed and the save-me look he shot my way was anything but funny. He really was that uncomfortable. It was definitely time to intervene.
She's right, I said as Colt took my hand. Her husband owns one of the hotels. Right, Maggie?
She openly glared at me, but her face turned sweet when she looked back at Beckett. Well, appraised was a better word. Openly ogled was another way to say it.
He does, which I guess means, in a way, you work for me.
His eyes turned glacial.
I'm an independent contractor, which means I work for myself.
I moved to stand next to Beckett, and he relaxed just enough for the change to be visible.
It's always good to see you, Maggie, but I think these guys are getting hungry, right?
I asked Beckett. He nodded.
It's always nice to meet other parents in Colt and Maisie's class.
The words were the right ones, but they were forced, like he'd practiced them in his head before saying them aloud. Maggie's shoulders fell, but she quickly recovered.
Of course, I guess I'd better get back to Drake. Are you joining us?
I looked down at Colt, who was luckily occupied with Havoc. He had to be getting hungry, and we were wasting lunchtime out here.
Actually, I was going to ask my Ella here if she wanted to grab some lunch with me.
The words came out of him just like every other time we'd talked by ourselves. Easy. Natural. Maggie noticed. Point. Set. Match. Whether or not it was true, I could have kissed him in gratitude. Not that I was going to kiss him, or touch him in any way that indicated anything more than friendship, if that's even what we had. What were we, anyway? Guilt-contracted neighbors? Maggie nodded and spun on her heel, nearly taking me out. Beckett reached around, steadying my shoulder as she passed. Who cared about the truth? Not me. After today's meeting and Maggie attack, I felt a sense of rebellion well in my stomach and spread outward. Colton McKenzie?
Mom?
Want to ditch the rest of the day with me? With us? I glanced up at Beckett.
Yes!
What do you want to do?
Beckett asked, crouching down. Colt's mouth and nose wiggled back and forth as he thought.
I want a picnic with Maisie, if she feels well enough.
I'd so lucked out getting this kid.
Picnic it is.
As we walked out to our cars, I brushed Beckett's arm, stopping him as Colton Havoc walked ahead a few feet. You're not a big people person, are you?
That obvious?
Absolutely. But oddly endearing, too, realizing that he was different with me. I just didn't see it until now.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm just comfortable around you.
that simple admission felt like the best compliment, and I felt my cheeks warm. You realize what you did, right? I needed him to understand the commitment he'd made, how precious the trust of a child was.
With lunch?
Soccer, Beckett. That's 3 practices a week and games on the weekend. That means on the days I'm at the doctor with Maisie,
I'm at the field with Colt. I'm not gonna let you down, Ella. Or him.
My teeth sank into my lower lip as I fought the urge to believe him, to trust that he'd be where he said he would be.
Trust me, please.
I know you have the best of intentions, but in my experience, guys don't always show up. I spoke the last bit at the concrete between my feet. To be exact, they lied and said they would, then never did. Maybe their reasons varied, but the end result never did. He tipped my chin up gently with his finger, and I found the courage bit by bit to meet his gaze.
I will show up for you. For Colt. For Maisie. I will not walk away. I will not abandon you. I will not die.
His words hit me smack in my heart with the force of a ton of bricks.
I will show up. And if you don't believe me now, that's okay. I'll earn it.
I have no right to expect that of you. We weren't together, or anything else that would even imply he had any such obligation. I had to trust that his sense of duty to my brother was strong enough to hold him here. And trust wasn't one of my strong points.
You have the right because I give it to you.
We stood like that, locked on each other, his hand beneath my chin, warring silently until I sighed and let my eyes close. Okay. But don't let him down.